Chapter 19. Erin woke up with a huge smile on her face. Today was the first day of the rest of her life, and for once, it was all amazing. Slightly less amazing was the huge mess in her common room. Erin's huge smile reduced in diameter, but she maintained a cheery outlook. True, her inn was trashed, but the money. The money! Gold coins, silver coins, copper coins. She had far more of the copper coins than anything else, but Kershaya had given her several gold coins as she'd brought goods up from the city throughout the night. Erin had a huge jar of money, and next to it was an even bigger jar, again filled with money. And next to that, Erin had to hug herself. She was so elated. It had worked. Her crazy idea had worked, and she'd earned so much. She had to give some of it away, of course. She hadn't paid Celis or Saria or Olesim for their help, and Ryoka had cooked up all the food. She wondered if the prickly girl would accept being paid. She would, right? If only Torin was here, life would have been perfect. That made Erin's smile slip, but just for a second. He would have cleared up this mess overnight and been staring creepily at her in the morning. But without him, she'd have to do it. Well, it was a fair price for a wonderful night. Erin sighed, rolled up her sleeves, and got to work. She could get a head start before she made breakfast. Something involving eggs and bacon, she guessed. It would be too much work to mix pancakes. As Erin began to hunt for dust rags, buckets of melted snow, and, of course, a mop and broom, she thought about last night. She'd leveled so many times. Erin knew level 20 wasn't actually that high. Celis had told her almost everyone got to that before they died. But still, level 21, and the singer class. Erin was surprised by that, but she had wanted to sing her best on the roof. And what were those skills? Perfect recall and control pitch? Did they work? Erin focused. Yes, they did. Amazingly so, in fact. Erin could remember every lyric, every verse in every song she'd ever sung. And what was more...
Testing, testing, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Her pitch was perfect. Even someone with an auto-tuner couldn't have improved her voice. It made Erin feel weird, like her voice wasn't her own anymore. But that feeling soon gave way to a greater desire to sing. Ryoka had taken away the iPhone right before she fell asleep, but Erin could still sing without the device. Besides, it was still enchanted and would probably blow Erin's eardrums out if she used it. Now, what song could she sing? Erin remembered her warm-up and smiled as the lyrics popped into her head. She bent to pick up a discarded dress, gingerly holding it between two fingers, and looked out to the brightening sky. Erin opened her mouth and sang.
Doe, a deer, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun.
Ryoka woke up to the sound of music. Because she had a hangover, this was a terrible, horrible experience. Each new verse was a nail being jackhammered into her skull, and the pillow Ryoka pressed over her head was taking too long to suffocate her. The heinous singing floated up from below, accompanied by the loud clink of porcelain being stacked together, or silverware being organized. What Erin had forgotten was that last night, everyone had imbibed quite a lot of alcohol. She'd drunk it too, of course, but Erin was immune to alcohol's effects, and so she was the only person waking up this morning without a hangover. After Erin got to La, Ryoka could bear it no longer. She seized the nearest object she could reach, staggered out her door, and hurled it down the stairs. It turned out that she'd hurled her bedside dresser, and it crashed into pieces as it hit the ground floor. Ryoka heard the shocked exclamation from Erin. She grunted something and stomped back to her bed.
Rude!
But the singing stopped. Ryoko rolled back into bed and caught far more than 40 winks. When she woke up at last, it was an hour or two later and Ryoko was hungry. She stumbled out her door and found everyone else was getting up as well. Their synchronization was probably due to the fact that the sun had hit all of their windows at the same time, and Erin still hadn't bought any curtains for her new inn. Sleepy faces and wincing expressions. Ryoka nodded to the others.
Ryoka?
Saria?
Val?
Olesum?
The drake staggered out of Saria's room and paused. He looked around at the other people in the inn. Slowly, he backed into the room and shut the door. Ryoka stared at Saria. The half-elf shrugged. She didn't quite meet anyone else's eyes as they walked downstairs. They found Erin bright and cheerful, and a steaming bowl of scrambled eggs, a plate of greasy bacon, and bread. Ryoka could have hugged Erin, but she was more interested in eating.
So, how did you all sleep? Sorry about the singing.
I quite enjoyed it. It was an unusual song.
Val smiled at Erin around his breakfast. Ryoka grunted. Saria nodded as she massaged her temples.
What a night. I can't believe half of what I remember. And what I do remember.
She broke off, not looking at Olesum. And he was pointedly not looking at Saria. Ryoka eyed his twitching tail. Erin didn't seem to notice either reaction. Instead, she pointed excitedly at the chessboard on the table.
Guess what, guys? Look at this! The chessboard I caught was magical!
Everyone looked around. Olesum dropped his fork, and Val whistled as he saw the ghostly pieces.
Oh, I thought something was off. Well, now, that's not something you see every day.
Ryoka frowned.
What is it?
Some kind of duplication spell and magically connected board, I would guess. Obviously.
Ryoka turned her head and saw Pisces lurch into the inn. He looked and smelled like he'd been sleeping outside. The trash that fell from his robes attested to that fact.
Oh, Pisces.
Saria, I see you are having breakfast. Allow me to join you.
Pisces inserted himself at Saria's table, much to her displeasure. Erin glared at Pisces, but she didn't oust him from the inn. Instead, she looked back at the chessboard.
So, it's like a magic chessboard that allows you to play against someone far away? Cool! I had one just like it back at home.
Ryoka glared at Erin while Pisces and Val raised their eyebrows. Olesum was busy inspecting the board, murmuring excitedly over the ghostly pieces. They did look quite impressive, especially as it turned out that the ghostly wisps followed the pieces as the drake tried to move them across the board.
They're cold.
The pieces were indeed cool to the touch, and Ryoka imagined holding solidified air as she touched them. Erin stared at the board, and the pawn moved on the other side.
Well, this is an invitation to play if ever I saw one. Sounds like fun.
Ryoka tried to quickly run through the consequences of playing a game, but she couldn't think of too many. Besides, whoever had sent the board clearly knew it had arrived. Erin reached for a piece, but Olesum's tail twitched and she paused, seeing it. The tactician hesitated and then looked at Erin pleadingly.
Can I play a game? I wouldn't want to impose, but I'm curious. After you've played a few games, do you think I could try?
Well, why not now?
Erin moved aside and gestured Olesum into the seat. The drake gaped at Erin, and Ryoka smiled in her seat.
What? But no, I couldn't do that.
Olesum protested as Erin pulled back the chair for him. She shook her head at him.
Oh, come on. It's not like it's that important who plays first. And besides, the other person has no idea who I am. Go on, I need to clean up anyways.
Oh, if you're sure.
Olesim's hands were twitching as much as his tail as he sat at the chessboard. Hesitantly, he peered at the pieces and then moved a pawn forwards. While he was waiting, and Ryoka wondered if he'd be waiting for a long time given the time zones that could be involved for the other player, she looked at Saria. The mage was looking at Olesim, but she turned to Ryoka and also turned red when the human girl nudged her.
I was, Ryoka.
I'd like to talk with you about learning magic later, if you're not too busy.
Saria smiled wryly.
Not at all. I've got a few things to do this morning, but would a few hours from now be fine?
Sounds good. I'm going to run and then rest some more. I'll meet you back here.
It moved! It moved!
Olesim's excited voice caught everyone's attention. Ryoka glanced over and saw Peace had indeed moved. Olesim was transfixed, but then he cautiously moved a piece. After a few seconds, the invisible opponent replied. That was impressive. It hadn't been, what, more than a few seconds? Had the mysterious sender been waiting for someone to make a move? Ryoka liked chess, but she wasn't nearly as fanatical as Aaron and Olesim were.
I'm going to stay here and clean up while Olesim plays, and then I'll play. It'll be a fun day.
Aaron collected plates and cutlery as she announced that fact to the room. Saria nodded and gestured at the mage at her side.
Pisces and I will visit the city. I want to see Yvlon, and he's going to get new robes.
I am.
Pisces looked dubiously at Saria. He plucked at his much-stained robes.
My current garments are quite suitable.
They are not.
Everyone agreed with Saria's statement. The half-elf pointed at Pisces.
You're disgusting. You've still got that gold we paid you for Ryoka's leg. Use some of it.
He hesitated and rose to follow her as she walked towards the door.
Oh, about that. You wouldn't be able to give me a small loan, would you?
The door shut behind them. Ryoka and Val left soon afterwards. That left only Aaron and Olesim in the inn. Aaron kept tidying up, getting rid of stains, forgetting everything in the rhythm of work. It wasn't easy, but it wasn't hard either. In truth, only the stains and bits of food particles that got into cracks in the floorboards and under her chairs and so on irked Aaron. Now, why couldn't she have gotten advanced cleaning or something instead? Although her two skills did sound useful. Aaron wondered what kind of food she'd be able to make tonight. What should she make tonight? After a while, she heard an odd thumping sound coming from Olesim. She looked and saw his tail smacking the ground as Olesim stared at the table. There was a helpless look in the drake's eyes.
Olesim, what's wrong?
He turned to her. Olesim looked like he was about to cry as he pointed to the chessboard. The white chess pieces were covering the board, while only a king and two pawns remained on his side.
I'm sorry. I can't do anything.
Ryoka inhaled the fresh, cold air as she stepped outside. Winter. Winter. She wasn't a fan. The cold and snow made it impossible for her to run barefoot, so she hated the winter. That was all there was to it. Technically, Ryoka could run barefoot in the snow. Some runners could even run through freezing water in the winter. She'd seen YouTube videos, but it was a bad idea to do on a long run, and dangerous. Besides, her parents had freaked out when they learned Ryoka was doing it, so that was that. Val appeared next to Ryoka and began doing the same sort of stretches she was doing. She glanced at him and wondered if they were thinking of the same thing. A morning run. It was the best time for it. Her body was stiff and her head was still fuzzy and hurting from last night. No help for it but to run it all off. Daily morning runs were a part of Ryoka's life. If she wasn't going on a delivery today, she wanted to run for a while.
Are you going for a run? Want company?
Val's offer surprised Ryoka. She stared at him for a few seconds before replying.
I'd just slow you down. You're way faster than me.
It didn't even hurt to admit. There was such a huge difference between them, it would hurt more to deny such an obvious fact. But Val didn't seem to think so. He scratched at his neck and looked at Ryoka.
That may be true, but why would that stop us running together? I don't have to use skills. In fact, I prefer not to. Double step and quick movement might be great for long distances, but they make me far too tired to do whenever I feel like it. So, that run?
Sure. It was odd. Ryoka wasn't a social runner. On the track team in high school, she'd been just as antisocial as anywhere else. In fact, she was even more ostracized there because she was the track team's best runner and she didn't get along with anybody. A pariah who showed up for events and track meets and nothing else. That had been her parents' fault as much as hers. They'd forced the coach to let Ryoka train by herself since she would anyways after the track team finished. A bad decision. One of many Ryoka hadn't protested or had made over the years. She hoped running with Val was a good idea. She let him set the pace, and he led her at a reasonably fast jog through the snow. Not too fast. She soon realized he wanted to talk as they ran, which was another unknown concept to her.
That was one wild night, wasn't it? I've seen celebrations in cities that didn't reach that level. And the music. Dragons above. I've never heard anything like it.
It was good, wasn't it?
Words didn't capture that night for Ryoka. It wasn't magical or anything life-changing, but it was special all the same. It was slightly magical. Okay, it was a good night. A rarity for her.
And that device Erin was using, was that yours? It makes music?
It plays back music.
Ryoka fished out the iPhone from her pocket and showed Val. It was off, and he peered at it curiously before picking up the pace.
I don't understand it, but I've seen objects that record sight and sound, and smell. I assume it's like that.
It's from where Erin and I come from. You can think of it as magic. It's close enough.
Perhaps it had been a mistake to give away that she had the iPhone. But that conversation with the others had illustrated just how borked the idea of keeping their world secret was. Besides, there was a benefit to giving some things away.
Let me know if you meet someone who has something like this, though, will you? I'd be interested in meeting them.
I would, too, especially if they're anything like you and Erin.
Well, they might be, but I haven't met anyone else.
Ryoka felt her legs warming up as they ran through the wet snow. The sun was warm on their skin, and she was feeling better by the second. Nothing beat a good run, and surprisingly, the conversation didn't hurt either.
Again, I've got to thank you. That charm you had, I want to repay you somehow. It was extremely expensive.
Like I said, forget about it. It's one favor from a runner to another.
Ryoka shifted uncomfortably. What Val had said sounded a lot like what she'd heard Fowls saying all the time.
Still, it's not a small thing. 1,000 gold coins.
This time, Valsafe made a face and slowed down so he and Ryoka were next to each other. He looked at her seriously.
Ryoka, we're runners. When one of us needs help, the other runners give what they can. If we need someone to help carry a delivery, we ask, because we are alike, you and I. Today you need help. Tomorrow I might be the one in trouble, or someone else. I'm just paying back favors I received in the past.
She considered that. Val looked around and sighed.
Look, I'm not too happy about losing that charm either, but that's how life works. We lose and we win. The last runner who helped me out took 2 arrows, pulling me to safety after a bandit lord jumped me. It's the least I can do.
Ryoka nodded, then she lowered her head.
Damn it. I'm a fool.
What? Why?
Ryoka tried to explain as best she could. It sounded terrible and confused to her ears. She wasn't used to talking about anything, with anyone. But Val seemed to get it. He slowed slightly as he thought.
I understand what that Fowl's guy was saying, but that's not exactly how I view it. It's a problem with small-time guilds. Here.
He changed directions as he jogged through the snow. Ryoka followed him and noticed they had just avoided a suspiciously flat spot.
Shield spider nest?
Other runners warned me they like to hide in the ground during the winter. Good thing they're the only dangerous monster that lays traps, at least during this time of year. I'd never come here in the spring or summer without preparing a wand or two.
Val shook his head.
Still, better than Krellers. Dead gods, I can't stand those things. But where was I? Right. Small guilds like that are different than what I'm saying. There, it's follow the rules or get out. But couriers don't answer to our guilds in the same way. We back each other up if we're in danger, but no one bosses anyone else around. What that Fowl's guy and the guild wanted you to do. I'd be on your side as well.
You would?
That surprised Ryoka, although perhaps it shouldn't have. Val clearly wasn't one of the runners in a guild, and he'd treated the other runners like a different kind of people.
We're a community, not a cult. And it's not like I go around tossing charms at everyone I meet. If that pinch-faced girl wanted help, for instance, I would have let her get hexed all day long.
He gestured at Ryoka as they powered up a steep hill.
You're different. That Fowl's guy, the girl I saved.
Geria.
Right. Well, they're only going to become couriers if they get really lucky and learn a good skill. That doesn't seem likely to me. But you're faster than them without levels, and you've got the grit to run all night to get here.
You think so? But I don't. I don't have any levels. I could never run like you do.
Ryoka admitted that with a lot of regret. She'd always assumed that levels were just a cheap trick, a way to cheat or play someone else's game. But of all the things in the world, seeing Val run like that had tempted her the most.
If I decided to level up, maybe that would be better. Smarter, more sensible.
She expected Val to agree with her, but instead, he seemed wary of the idea.
I personally don't think it's worth it.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, and please take no offense, but you'll never reach my level if you start now. I know warriors and other classes level up faster if they kill stronger enemies and so on, but runners gain levels differently.
How so?
We level up based on how far we've run and how challenging it is. True, you could do some horribly hard runs, but even then, I doubt you'd hit level 10 by the end of the year, and it would just get slower from there. No, I'd say you've got your own unique style without levels. You should continue as you are.
That was the first time Ryoka had heard that opinion. She glanced at Val's profile and his bent nose.
You think so? No one else I've met shares your opinion.
Well, it's a preference thing. And besides, you probably don't know this, but skills aren't the same, even for people with the same class.
Ryoka had inferred something like that from comments from other runners, but she had never heard it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. She let Val go on as they ran a slow circuit of the floodplains of Liscor.
His skills are... how should I describe them? They're like a gamble, but a safe one. As you level up, you'll definitely gain some good skills and some not-so-useful ones. But you can generally predict which ones you'll get based on your class.
Ah, a pool of options?
Val lifted a thumb up and inclined his head at her.
Precisely. There are rare skills you can get, like double step, and not-so-rare ones. For instance, almost every warrior is going to get thick skin if they go for close-range combat sooner or later, but they might get it at level 5 or level 50. Not level 50.
Why not? Wait, there are rare skills every 10 levels?
Good guess. Yeah, I got my double step skill at level 30. And of course, sometimes you can learn a rare skill, but that takes training and some luck. I suppose if you had a class, you could learn something that allowed you to move faster, but...
Not worth it, right. But how can I run faster without classes?
With magic, of course. I've met people like you before. People without levels, I mean. That's how they overcome the problem.
Ryoka slowed and her foot skidded over a patch of ice. She caught herself and ran after Val as he paused for her to catch up.
You have?
Yeah, I meet them now and then. People of all kinds choose not to level. Well, they're not too common, as you can imagine, but I do run across them now and then.
Are there any differences between them and others?
Attitude? The way they get treated? Nothing else.
That was disappointing, but maybe. Ryoka tried to keep the conversation going while she thought.
And do you think I can become a courier even without skills? With magic?
It's possible. You just need the right equipment. The right magic if you've got the talent. Not all couriers are fast. Some run a bit slower than you, but can't be stopped. There's a marksman among us who rides a horse. She snipes anyone getting in her way from 200 feet away.
So build up my resume until I'm famous enough, huh?
Your what? Oh, you mean take a lot of prestigious requests? Yeah, get a name for yourself as a trusted runner and it'll happen. You just need to take requests, no other runner will do.
Well, I'm on a good start.
Oh, how so?
Ryoka hesitated, but she'd talked honestly with Val so far, and she wanted to be on a level. Besides, she told him briefly about Teriark's request, leaving out all the really interesting details. Val whistled.
800 gold pieces? You're kidding. No wonder your guy was expecting a courier.
Well, it was 40 gold pieces and a potion until I started bargaining with him.
Val had to think as they ran on. Ryoka had asked him whether he knew of the lands past the Bloodfields, omitting any mention of undead or the person she had to find, Oz Karash.
The Bloodfields and the Southern Lands, huh? You got a problem there, but I'm not sure I can help you. I've only been down that way once or twice.
Pity. I'll manage.
You shouldn't have to go in there uninformed, though. And while I might know... Oh, hold on. Let me see if I can find the other courier nearby.
What?
Val reached into a pouch at his belt. He pulled out a stone, of all things. It was vaguely like the one Teriark had given Ryoka, a normal, smooth stone, although this one was inscribed with glowing symbols rather than an arrow. They lit up as Val touched a finger to the rock. Ryoka heard nothing, but Val must have heard a voice because he began talking to the air as they ran.
Oh, hello? Am I speaking to Hawk? Oh, this is Valsay for first landing. I'm in the area, and I was wondering if you had time to consult with me and another runner. We're just outside the city, running. Would you like to... Oh, thanks.
He tucked the stone back into his pocket and looked at Ryoka.
I've called Hawk, a courier who does runs around here. He'll be with us in a few seconds.
That was no exaggeration. Barely 10 seconds after Val had spoken, Ryoka spotted something hurtling towards them out of the city gate. She barely caught sight of the runner himself. The snow geysering up behind him was what caught Ryoka's eye. He intercepted the two runners within seconds, and the snow cascaded down around them as Hawk, Beastkin, Giant Talking Rabbit, and Courier of Lascor appeared.
Val safe! I'm surprised they sent you down here!
Hello, Hawk. Well, you know how it is. You were busy and I was nearby and they needed to rush a job, so here I am.
The two runners clasped hands. Ryoka stared at Hawk's large paw and his furry face, and at him. She couldn't deal. No, she was lost. He was a giant rabbit. This wasn't just seeing a drake or a gnoll. This was a talking rabbit with pants and a six-pack. Ryoka's mind was dissolving at the edges.
And this is Ryoko Griffin, a city runner. I was hoping you could help her. Ryoko, meet one of the fastest couriers on the continent.
Ah, Hawk, I'm the courier around here. Pleased to meet you, Miss Ryoko.
Ryoko took the paw gingerly and shook it. He had 5 fingers, but 4 toes on his feet. The fur felt smooth and warm in her hands, and she met his brown eyes and tried to smile. Val took over the conversation. He briefly explained Ryoka's delivery, adding a few details she thought were unnecessary.
She's a city runner, but a step above the other ones. I was hoping you could give us some advice.
Hawk smiled at Ryoka and shrugged.
Well, I can keep you from running into too much trouble, but there's always some war or skirmish going on down there. It's risky for a city runner, or even an inexperienced courier. You might want to reconsider going down there, miss.
He wasn't precisely arrogant, but he seemed too relaxed to be taking the conversation seriously. After seeing how fast he was, Ryoka couldn't blame him for thinking she was small fry. She steeled herself. Rabbit or not, he was still a person. Remember that. Erin made talking to other species look so easy. She grinned at Hawk and decided to take him down a peg. Just a peg.
You could say that. My delivery's worth 800 gold pieces. Think it's worth doing?
Hawk tripped, but caught himself before he face-planted in the snow. He eyed Val. The other human was grinning at him. Hawk smiled ruefully and nodded at Ryoka in apology.
Well, I've underestimated you, I can see. But my point stands about the danger, especially if you've got something that might attract attention. Want to give the request to me? I'll do the delivery and cut you in on 100 gold pieces.
Ryoka shook her head. She wasn't about to trade the request, even if it would mean no risk to her. After what she'd learned about Terriark, she just had to fulfill his request, for more reasons than one. Val looked at the other courier reprovingly.
Hawk.
The man raised his hands defensively.
I'm just asking. Okay, I thought you weren't being serious, but I'm sorry, Miss Ryoka. Right then, this is a serious delivery.
And she's doing it.
I just offered. Thanks, but I'm fine.
Ryoka gestured to her belt pouch where the letter and ring were hidden.
Besides, what I'm delivering is spelled to only be carried by me. You'd probably die if you tried to take it. That's an important detail. Right. Well, advice I'm happy to give. What do you need to know? Travel routes, current battlefields?
All of the above, and local monsters, and so on. Ryoka's never been down that way.
Hawk nodded. His ears twitched, and he looked out at the pristine snow around them.
Mind if we run and talk?
It's fine with me. I know a good route around here with some nice flat spots. Want me to lead?
Sounds good.
Go ahead.
They set off. Like Val, Hawk adjusted his pace so Ryoka could comfortably keep up. It felt odd being the slowest person in the group. Hawk began to talk as they ran together.
Now, do you know where you're going, or do you have a moving target? If it's something like one of the walled cities, you'll be able to get there pretty easily. If not, I've got a spell that points me in the right direction. I have no idea where I'm going.
Val groaned.
Ugh, I hate those.
Hawk nodded. The rabbit took long, easy strides that made Ryoka envy him. He didn't even seem bothered by the snow as he ran through it. Well, he had pads on his feet. Paws.
Tricky. If you're going by spell, you could run right into a monster nest, or one of the war zones down there. There are a few conflicts going on, and any human running past is going to get shot at, runner or not.
What? Soldiers don't attack runners. If they know you're a runner, they should leave you alone.
Val looked indignant, but Hawk only smiled at him.
Huh, if you can prove you're a runner before they fill you with arrows, be my guest. Besides, they use spells that blast an entire area, so there's no guarantee you won't be caught up in one. My advice is just stay away, but if you gotta head into one of those zones,
He began listing locations off, and Ryoka tried to memorize them. Val pulled out a map of the area and began marking spots for her. Another gift. She tried to refuse, but he told her it was only worth a gold coin or two. In response, she tossed 2 at him as they ran.
Just be careful. You can talk to soldiers if they aren't trying to kill you and usually get past, so that's not the real problem. What is?
Hawk leapt straight over a 5-foot-high drift of snow and landed lightly. He turned and ran backwards while Val and Ryoko went around it.
Things to watch out for? I'd start with the gnolls. Keep away from them unless you're absolutely sure you know which tribe it is. Some are friendly towards humans and other species, but others will try and eat you. Believe me, I know from experience.
He scowled, rubbing at his neck. Ryoko could just imagine the conflict that would arise. She looked at Hawk and decided she would never be able to eat rabbit again. Not that she was particularly a fan in the first place.
There are several nasty goblin tribes down that way. Don't underestimate them. They're not like the normal ones around here. There are lots of monsters, but they're mostly hibernating or hiding in the winter. Watch out for snow golems, though. They're practically invisible in the snow. Oh, and wyverns. The white ones come down from the mountains sometimes, and they love the cold.
Ryoka knew what a wyvern was, but she couldn't believe the other thing Hawk had said.
Snow golems? Do you mean giant snowmen? Snow things.
Right. Sorry.
Common mistake. I suppose you've seen what happens when some stupid brats make a snowdrake and forget to give it clothes? Imagine that, only 10 times bigger with icicles with claws and teeth. Plus, they can hurl snowballs filled with rocks. Ugh.
Hawk shuddered.
Oh, I hate them so much. If you ever know you're getting close to a group of them, bring some kind of fire spell with you.
Ooh, and wyverns. Keep an eye on the sky. If you see anything overhead, even if you think it's an eagle, make sure you've got somewhere to hide where they can't reach you. They can dive incredibly fast, so be careful if it's cloudy.
And you're not going to talk me out of this, despite the danger?
Ryoka looked at both couriers, amused. This sounded almost as bad as the high passes, but then she'd been told by everyone that it was suicidal to try to go there. Both Val and Hawk shook their heads. Val gestured at her as they began to circle back in the direction of the inn.
If you've taken the contract, you're bound to deliver it. And if you're the type to give up just because you might die, you'll never become a courier.
Ryoka grinned, and Hawk and Val returned it. It was odd, being in sync with other people.
Anything else? The undead. Be very wary of them.
This time Hawk looked completely serious.
You weren't here for the undead that attacked, were you?
I saw the aftermath.
Yeah, well, they weren't nearly as bad as the ones you can find around the blood fields. I mean, there was that big one, but individually the worst undead out there were crypt lords.
That's nasty enough. They're commander types.
Yeah, but they were commanding zombies, skeletons, and ghouls. Not scary. But a lot of the undead you can find down there are leftovers from the necromancer.
Oh.
Ryoka looked between human man and rabbit man.
The necromancer? You mean the one who raised the undead army? What kind of undead are we talking about here?
Hawk shuddered.
Horrible ones. Smart ones. He enslaved wraiths and ghosts and built new types of undead. Look, just before you go, buy some emergency gear. Something to get you away quick if you run into a group of them.
Ryoka felt at the potion at her belt and remembered the ones she'd gotten from Octavia.
I've got some stuff, and 4 healing potions and 3 stamina potions. Enough?
Should be.
As long as you don't stray too far from the roads. Healing potions are only useful if you're alive to use them. Best trick is not to get hurt.
Agreed. Just don't get hurt.
And don't give up. Delivery or die.
Ryoka had to laugh. Both couriers were like her. It was amazing. She took a breath and quoted from memory.
Neither rain nor snow nor gloom of night shall stay these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds, huh?
Both Val and Hawk looked at Ryoka in astonishment.
That's quite good. Where did you hear that?
Oh, it's a quote from my home about couriers.
Neither rain nor snow... Yeah, I like it.
Hawk nodded his head, and Val did as well.
We might just have to use that line. Thanks, Miss Ryoka.
Call me Ryoka.
Miss seemed to be this world's way of being polite, almost like Japanese honorifics. She bowed her head at the other two couriers as they slowed on their approach to the inn.
Thank you, both of you. I owe you a lot. I'll repay the favor someday.
It was nothing.
Hawk waved a paw dismissively, and then he grinned at Val and Ryoka.
Talk is cheap, but meeting other good runners? It's great to meet other people who can run. You wouldn't believe how slow the ones around here are.
And hey, maybe we can go back to that inn for some more hamburgers afterwards, eh?
Val and Ryoka paused. Ryoka remembered how many she'd eaten yesterday, for both lunch and dinner. Val was clearly thinking the same thing.
No.
Not for at least a month.
Both Val and Ryoka said it at the same time. Hawk looked slightly hurt.
Aw, why not? You were both at the inn last night, weren't you? The one with the music? Aw, it was great. I must have eaten 8 of the things, and then I got some tail, if you know what I mean.
He grinned at Val and made a wiggling motion with his paw.
Drakes, so slippery, you know?
Val and Ryoka exchanged a look. Val looked at Hawk.
Tail? You don't mean...
Ryoka's mind literally shut down at the idea of Hawk eating 8 hamburgers and then finding a female drake and... Neither human spoke, but they both accelerated at the same time. Hawk had to increase his stride to keep up. He glared at them as he kept pace.
Oh, come on. Do you think I'd be in a fleshy people like you? I'd rather kiss a minotaur first. At least they have something covering them. Furballs, you humans are so touchy.
Olesim was not a drake given to arrogance, but he still had his pride. It had been badly crushed, beaten, and stomped by a certain human and the undead, but it was still pride nevertheless. He leveled up, risked his life, and tried to learn to play his favorite game as best he could. He'd learned from the greatest chess player in the world, Aaron, and he thought he'd made something of himself. But now, he knew the truth. The cold waters of reality were lapping around his head, and Olesim was too downtrodden to even bother trying to swim. He felt Aaron come over and wished he was the kind of person who could capture her heart. But he was a tactician, not a good one, not nearly as good as one in Liscor's army, but he had a special skill. He could read people, and she wasn't interested in him. At all. Oh, she liked him, but Olesim knew it wouldn't be more than that. And of course, he'd found someone. It was just that she was like a beacon to him, a font of knowledge and unexplained mystery that stirred his soul. And he had let her down. He could barely look at Aaron. Shame made Olesim's tail droop.
I lost... 3 games in a row. I couldn't even put up a fight.
Aaron stared curiously at the chessboard as Olesim cringed. He couldn't even bear to see how badly he'd been demolished. It hadn't even been a battle, really. Just the other player pushing Olesim's head down into the waters and holding him there while he drowned.
Huh. That other guy's good. Or girl. Probably a guy, though.
You can tell what gender he is just by looking at the board?
Olesim's tail drooped even further. Aaron was so far above him.
No! I just mean, well, all the grandmasters back home were mostly guys. Girls didn't play chess as much, so I meant...
She stared at the board and then started resetting the pieces. Olesim stared glumly at the board.
I think I made him mad, or disappointed him. I'm so sorry.
After the first game, the other player had reset the board quickly. But this time, he, or she, let Aaron put all the pieces back. Yes, Olesim could feel the disapproval radiating off the pieces. It scourged him, and he couldn't deny it. If he had found out that the player who'd come up with that marvelous puzzle was just someone on Olesim's level, Olesim lowered his head to the table. He would apologize, leave the inn, go to the city, and not bother Aaron again until he was 10 levels higher. He would... A hand brushed the spines on Olesim's head, and he jerked. Aaron patted him gently on the head as she took a seat at the table.
There's no reason to be mad for playing someone worse than you are. Everyone has to learn. If this guy's mad, I'll teach him a lesson for you.
Aaron flipped the board around and moved a white pawn. Olesim hesitated, but his pulse suddenly began to speed up.
He's quite good.
I know, I could see. So, I guess I'll take this seriously.
I'll just, I'll give you some...
Olesen backed up until he was a table's length away from Erin. He waited, with bated breath, as she stared at the board. Then, almost reluctantly, he saw a knight move to F6. His spirit sank again. This was... what had Erin called it? Oh yes, Aryohin's defense. It was an aggressive opening to counter with, and it hinted that the other player had grown tired of playing Olesim. At first, he'd played very cautiously, but now... Erin smiled. She moved another piece forwards, a knight to C3. Almost instantly, the other player countered, moving his knight again. But Erin didn't stop. She started playing pieces rapidly, as soon as the other player moved his. Olesim could feel the shock running through the board. The other player had probably just realized someone else was playing. Olesim hadn't moved his pieces so quickly, and certainly not with such skill. For 5 whole minutes, the game paused, and Olesim could feel the other side recalculating. When the game resumed, it was slower, and the other player took his time thinking his moves over.
Oh.
It was a soft sound in the gentle silence of the inn. It came from Erin as the game was more than halfway done. She'd made a mistake, and the other player had taken her queen. Olesim stared at the board in shock, and then at Erin. She was surprised, but she just looked at the board and started recalculating her position. He heard her murmur as she tapped her chin.
He's quite good. Yeah.
And then, she grinned. It was an expression like many of the bright smiles Olesim had seen and felt before. But this one was different. It made his scales tingle. Because there was a light in Erin's eyes he hadn't seen before, and as she moved the next piece, punishing the bishop that had stolen her queen, he thought she looked... hungry. Yes, that was it. Whatever else you might say of Erin, her skill at chess was indisputable. In this world, chess had lived in the minds of a few players for less than 3 years, but Erin had grown up playing chess as a child. She had breathed and lived the game, playing more matches in a year than Olesim had in his life. Erin had grown up studying over 1,500 years of chess. She'd learned from grandmasters and countless games she could look back on. Chess strategy had evolved much since the origin of the game, and Erin had learned to play at such a level that even among the 600 million players in the world, she still stood close to the top. To Olesim, she was a god of chess that had come to this world. He had never beaten Erin, never even come close. But it is lonely standing alone at the top. Only once he'd seen Erin challenged. Only once had he ever seen her lose. She'd played 100 workers at once, and then taught them an immortal game, and then she had played one of her own. Olesim still remembered that game. It must have been so lonely afterwards, to play against players who couldn't even make her take the game seriously. But now, Erin played silently, sitting with her back straight against the chair, posture perfect. She didn't look around, didn't chatter happily as she played. For once, she was concentrating completely on the game. And as the game drew close to its ending, her responses got faster, her concentration even deeper. At the end, Erin took the black king, and Olesim remembered to breathe again. Erin sat back in her chair and laughed in delight, and that sound was pure and made him realize that she was happy. Happy to have won, but happier to have played.
Come on! Another game?
Erin started resetting the board, but she tapped one of the ghostly pawns on the chessboard once, and Olesim saw the black pawn move up and gently tap the board as well. They understood each other.
They were two players separated by hundreds, possibly thousands of miles, but they understood each other. They were here to play. So they did. Another game, and another. Aaron won both. Olesim watched as the fourth game began and realized the truth. Yes, whoever was on the other side of the chessboard was not Aaron's equal, but they were close. So close. And in each game, they sent a message to Aaron, one written in every closely contested exchange, every lost pawn and checkmate. You are not alone. Olesim wiped tears from his eyes. His heart ached, and he knew it would be silly to anyone watching. But there was a beauty in this that only someone who loved the game could see. It took so much to look away, but he had to. Olesim walked into the kitchen and found what he was looking for. He found a bunch of parchment Aaron had bought when he was helping out. It was still there, in a cupboard with an inkpot and quill. Olesim returned to the living room and stared at the game. It was going slowly, and he looked at Aaron's face just for a second. She was closing her eyes, smiling gently, and his heart hurt for a moment. He slowly picked up the quill and dipped it into the ink. Olesim began to write, noting down each move in the shorthand notation Aaron had taught him. And Aaron smiled, and the chess pieces moved. They danced on the board, and the Drake listened to history being made. Far away, and in a large tent in the middle of a hot and humid day, Nears Astoragon, second in command of one of the four great companies of Belleros, and highest-leveled strategist on the continent, gently pushed over the king and stared at the chessboard. He ignored the sounds of battle around him. His soldiers would emerge triumphant, and his lieutenants had the battle well in hand. Interfering with them would only impede their growth. No. Instead, he stared at the shimmering board and the magical pieces arranged on it. He had lost for the fourth time. It had been close, ever so close, but he had lost for the fourth time. Nears did not rage. He was not, in fact, angry. Instead, he smiled in much the same way Aaron had. He put one hand on his chin and stroked it, feeling stubble rasp under his fingers. He had forgotten to shave, or sleep, for that matter. He had been waiting to play the puzzle maker, and after an initial disappointment, his patience had been rewarded tenfold. For a second, Nears debated hunting for his razor. He would have borrowed one of his lieutenant's blades, but he hated how they fussed over him. A dagger as large as he was still a dagger, and he was more than strong enough to lift it. It was just awkward, that was all. Appearance trumped desire. Nears was a level 63 strategist, and on his shoulders the fate of his company rested. He could not let his soldiers down. But perhaps after he had played another game... Nears reached down for a chess piece and then paused. A sound was coming from outside, a dissonance in the sounds of battle. Nears listened and sighed. Some fool had just deployed the other army's elite vanguard against his soldiers, turning this skirmish into a far bloodier battle. His soldiers would need his help. Nears raised a hand and said two words.
Assault formation.
The air on the battlefield changed. Satisfied, Nears turned back to the board, ignoring the roar that came from his soldiers as the tide shifted once more. He looked back at the board. He had sent it on a whim, judging the cost worth the possibility of a decent game. But now a bigger question loomed in his mind, one he'd wished he had asked sooner.
Who are you?
The chess pieces didn't answer out loud. But as Nears saw the white side reset itself, he knew he would find part of the answer in the game. He sat down, concentrated harder than he had for what seemed like years, and began to play.